I don't think you sent me that new music. Is that the new music for the show? That's pretty good.
It should be.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll just do it a cappella.
A cappella?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. It's going to be a beautiful performance.
Are we recording?
We can start recording.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes I'm like, did he sneaky start recording on me?
Well, sometimes I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you do it this time?
I did do it this time.
Oh my God. You have to leave this in.
I can leave everything in.
Yeah.
I'll leave it all.
You should.
I rarely cut shit out.
Yeah. I mean, I like that. I feel like that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
What's up, babes? Hi.
Babes in Babeland.
Babes, all the babes out in Babeland, all the Babylonians, all the babies out there. It's Christine and Brian coming to you live from my dining room.
Podcast studio.
Our podcast studio. I can see all of the spices on my spice rack, Brian. Like, this is my dining room.
I mean, I think that's what a podcast studio is supposed to have.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think you're right.
I help run like 3 or 4.
We could make a great casserole right now and record a podcast.
That sounds fantastic, actually. Yeah.
I mean, I don't have any ingredients other than spices. Hey guys, very exciting. We published our first podcast just this week. Well,
yay.
This will be publishing way later, so probably a few episodes will be out by the time this gets out.
How do you feel about?
I feel so excited. I feel like so proud and so happy that I put something into the world that matters to me.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. That's what's cool about this.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the people that I love and care about reached out to me and they said they listened and they loved it. And that's all that matters.
Yeah. I think it was a great, great start.
Yeah. It was really good. It was mm-hmm. a good interview.
Yeah, it was.
Natalie was super fun.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of interviews.
We just went through one.
We just had one. Yeah. Zach Rowe, our friend from Equitas Health and Queer Behavior stopped by and we had a long conversation about his life and his journey and where he started from, which I can say is the bottom. I would say he started at the bottom. Now he's here.
There's specifically a couple moments, if you listen, me going in the background going like, fuck.
Yeah.
Or fuck. Shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck. Yeah. I mean, I think I said those things into the mic as well. So
yeah, as well as everyone else should as they hear his words.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh my God.
Right.
No, I was like, Christine, you picked one hell of a, one hell of a third guest.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a wild ride,
but it was really good.
It was really good. It was really good. And you know, I think the most important thing to me about doing this is really truly emotionally connecting with people and it being a genuine space for us to just, you know, learn about each other. And the best part I think of some of these interviews is the after interview where you just keep talking and we're not recording.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of hit me like maybe we should start recording again because like some other crazy shit, you know, yeah. came out after we were done recording. But
yeah, we did like another 20 minutes or so.
Yeah, it was still a great interview and it was really, you know, it was mm-hmm. it's an experience that I think people should know about.
Yeah.
And it informs a lot of what's, you know, sort of going on right now, especially with queer behavior and, you know, the whys and the hows.
I think a lot of things he talked about too are great things to hear, especially if you're in a rut right now, or
yeah.
if you're in like a if you're frustrated with everything that's going on. And
right.
Let's be honest, there's a lot of frustrating things going on. I feel like this is it's a weird way to almost feel relieved.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's how I felt after the yeah. interview.
Yeah, I mean he's super, you know, in good spirits, and
when he has so many reasons not to be.
Yeah. So anyway, so it's a great interview. I'm really excited for you to listen. But before we get started with that, I do want to talk to you about just some stuff that's going on in my world right now.
Yeah, what's going on, Christine?
I talk a lot about other people, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take the mic for a minute.
Yeah.
I am planning a show right now called Pumpkin Spice Pride. I haven't formally invited Brian to be on, but I would like for him to be on.
What? Is this you inviting me?
Yeah.
Doing it on your podcast? That's so cool.
It's so official.
Now it's contractual.
It's on November 1st at 10 p.m. at Ethel's, which is attached to the Short North Stage. And it's going to be a really fun show.
What am I telling jokes for?
So it's a show called Pumpkin Spice Pride. And I decided to pitch it because I think that fall is a time when, like, the patriarchy and, like, self-hating women are, like, being like, oh, my God, I'm so basic. I, like, wear leggings and Ugg boots and, like, I listen or I drink pumpkin spice lattes.
Right.
And listen to John Mayer. And I'm like, yeah, but, like, if that's what you like, you fucking like it, girl. Like, who cares?
John Mayer's the shit.
Don't let anyone tell you that you can't be comfortable in your fucking leggings as pants because that's bullshit. Mm-hmm. So now I just want to do a show where everyone comes, all the comics come, and they either tell jokes, like a whole set, or like a story about something that they're just fucking, they refuse, like a guilty pleasure that they refuse to feel guilt about. Or just like ways in which that they love themselves or, you know, love something that they supposedly shouldn't love. So that's my idea. I've invited a few people to be a part of it. Brian is one of them.
I will rally to your side.
It's going
to
be great.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. So like, you know, I'm not going to censor anyone, but like, I would love for it to all be like content around that theme.
No,
so if you can think of anything.
I think that's a good topic to strive for.
Yeah.
No, I can. I have a few ideas.
Okay.
I feel like other people will too.
Yeah, I think so.
So this will be at Ethel's, which is the garden bar.
Yeah.
The side room.
Yeah.
On November 1st.
Yeah, November 1st at 10 p.m.
Yeah, I'm available.
Yeah.
That's before my life goes to shit during the during the tour.
Yeah.
But no, that sounds great.
Yeah,
way
that'll be cool. Yeah, I'm really excited.
By the time we release this, it'll be too late. But you're doing a show next week, right?
I am.
At Ethel's?
Yeah, I'm doing a breast cancer. Ha-ha's for tatas.
We'll have to try to remember for you to talk called. About how it goes.
Oh, they're the dogs. The dog cast. Dog cast is starting.
Yeah. Dog babes.
Lula and Roscoe, they need their own podcast.
We're working on that.
We're getting there.
Anything else?
Yeah, and then I'll be at the Funny Bone on October 17th, which also...
Well, you'll obviously be in the semifinals, so...
I'll be rocking it. Yeah, who knows?
I'm sure people will hear about that.
Yeah. Oh, and I'll also be in my hometown of Youngstown, Ohio on November 19th.
Yes, you will. We will be at the...
I'm writing jokes actively about pierogies and women who get electrolysis. That's...
Now, that'll be a fun show. Angie Healy's going to be there, too.
Angie Healy,
Amber
yeah.
Amber Falter.
All of my uncles will be in the audience.
Shit.
It's going to be great. So tune in. Hang out with us. You probably skipped this intro, but if you didn't, you've just heard all of my plugs. And so I'm really happy about that.
You're an all-star babe if you listened to this intro.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of more babe names. We'll work on that.
We'll think about it. But for now, it's like Zach's a babe.
And he's our babe to know.
He's our babe to know. Babe alert, babe alert, babe alert. Enjoy the show, guys. And we'll see you next time. Kisses.
Yes.
Busy. You're a busy man.
I'm so busy.
You are. You work at Equitas.
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 Equitas. How do you say
Equitas?
It?
Equitas. No, Equitas.
Equitas.
Toss.
Okay. Yep. Am I still fucking it up?
Health. You have to say health afterward.
Equitas Health.
Yes. We are a community-based healthcare organization with a name that no one can pronounce.
Okay,
from
yeah.
The community.
There you go. Mm-hmm. I say it a different way every time I say it. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Oh, we like to mix it up too.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's for us.
Our
by
chief
us, you
marketing
know?
Officer does not find it funny.
Oh, but. Oh gosh. Oh no. I'm in deep trouble. Yeah. Let's edit that out, Brian. All right. Okay. So when you're not at Equitas Health, you started a group called
Queer Behavior. Yes.
Okay, Zach Rao, tell me more about queer. Did I just pronounce your name right?
Rowe.
Equitas. We gotta start over.
Oh my god, I am shitting the bed right now. Like, I'm not doing well.
All right, let's take a pause, and then, all right now.
Okay, Zach Rao.
Yes.
Tell us more about Queer Behavior.
So, when I moved to Columbus 11 years ago or okay. so, after dropping out of college or taking a break in quotations,
okay.
I came down here and I used to run away down here, in high school because there were like gay places that you could go, right? You could walk through the Short North and you could go to the coffee table and like maybe some dude would cruise you
yeah.
who was probably over 40 or 50.
Right.
But still it was really exciting that like gay people could exist in public.
Sure.
So it seemed like the only place after like leaving school and not knowing what was next, I came down here to figure it out.
Yeah.
And, shortly thereafter, the open book, the gay bookstore closed. A lot of the smaller gay bars started closing and then the coffee table closed and it felt like there weren't places for people to be in the daylight anymore. That mm-hmm. like the only time that queer people could be out and could be visible was at night at like the main bars like Union, which I loved going to at right. that time too. But I really wanted to like, I don't know, meet boys over coffee, not over beer.
Yeah.
I think we started talking a lot about like having queer spaces and how important that was to us. We being kind of just my friend group has always been really diverse. Mm-hmm. Not just in terms of like how we typically think of diversity, but in like terms of interests.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of friends in like the punk scene and in the house show scene. And so we started talking about DIY queer spaces. Monster House is a place, but like people didn't feel as though it was like queer enough or safe enough. And Sheridan House at the time and Bexley was like really popular for shows. And that was run by really queer friendly people, but it was still at night.
Right.
And so like some of the DIY kids and some of the punk kids. And then right around that time was when we really started talking about trans issues and when we really started talking about racial justice and noticing that like our bars were lily white and that the Short North was lily white, except for the people on the streets who were homeless. And so how do we like create spaces in the daylight where people can meet each other that are from all of these different communities, just like we were? How do we like build those connections?
Mm-hmm.
How do we bring the trans folks out of their living rooms and like into a space where we can all get to know each other?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what Queer Behavior, I guess, was about just making, like fostering an environment where people could build connections. So I think we say community building organization,
mm-hmm.
But there's not really any organization to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a bunch of like-minded people that want to ensure that Columbus is like safe and interesting and open for queer people of all different stripes.
Okay. So that how long ago was that Queer Behavior started?
That's a great question. I think it was 9 years ago.
Okay.
9 or 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you'd been here for a couple of years mm-hmm. and it finally sort of just all took on a life of its own kind of.
Yeah, exactly. So we had like, I think 12 or 15 people at our first meeting,
mm-hmm.
Which happened in Old Town, just a few blocks from where we are now.
Oh, wow.
And then we started meeting just kind of randomly in living rooms and talking about what we could do. And I think the group has had a couple different like lives. The first iteration was very much like we wanted to be a zine and serve as like an information hub. And mm-hmm. so we had like writers and we were trying to like put out articles and we bought a website and And then those folks moved away. So then it became like this activist organization. And then we were like writing like letters of protest to the local newspapers who were like doing transphobic coverage and demanding that people like take action and like planning protests. And then those people moved away.
Oh boy.
Because it's Columbus, Ohio, and people graduate college, they stay for a few years and then they move.
Right.
And that's what we saw. And then it became like a, okay, what are we now?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what we've become, which is much more like we create events.
Mm-hmm.
And the events aren't anything that we've, I mean, some of them are like what we've brought to the table, but it's mostly just people saying at our events, like, what about this? Like, mm-hmm. maybe you guys should try this.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than saying, great, we'll do that for you, we usually say, great, like, join us, like help us make that happen.
Right.
Because we have experience and we have a commitment to making these things happen anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been really great because it kind of fosters like development in queer people and they get experience on like how to do these things. I think it's really empowering for folks to say like, I want something to happen in my city and then to like see it come to fruition.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like one of the things that you had said, I think previously before when we were working on a project, you had said, you know, there's a difference between being involved in something and taking ownership of something. And, you know, that's something that I've just like generally applied to my own life, which I appreciate. And I just dig that, you know, and I feel like I see that happening in queer behavior. I see that empowerment happening with like asking other people to, you know, take ownership of something and letting them just do it and then helping them along the way. So I appreciate you for that. And giving me that. That was a gift, Zach.
Thanks.
It was a real gift. And I want to get back to queer behavior, but I really want to rewind right now.
Okay.
And I want to talk about how we got here. Because there was clearly like a very strong urge for you to create this group and to, you know, empower other people. And, you know, you said that you hadn't had like a community where you could just be gay, you know, in your life. So how did that start? Like, take us back to like your childhood and what that was like. Like, what kind of kid were you? Like, what was your childhood like?
I think I'd be defined or described as a motor mouth.
Okay.
I had a lot of energy. I also had weird tics, like obsessive compulsive.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always like blinking a lot or like doing weird things with my fingers in a specific order.
Yeah.
So I was kind of a weird kid. I guess I was always talking, always laughing, but I was also generally like the smarter kid. So the family thought that I was like the golden boy.
Yeah.
I grew up in a blended family. My parents both remarried when I was really young and they both had lots of other kids.
Yeah.
The other partners. So I think in total I had 9 brothers and sisters growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I lived with my mom and my stepfather, and my stepfather's father had founded a Southern Baptist church, and my stepfather was like considered the leader of that church because his father was getting older.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't be a deacon because he had been divorced, and the Southern Baptist faith is really, 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 really strict about that.
Yeah.
But he was the one that everyone turned to. He also led the men's group, and he ran all the church's finances and basically made all the decisions. He was also the lead singer in a Southern gospel quartet that toured like the region, the Midwest, for lack of a better term. And my mother was the choir director, youth group leader, and women's group leader.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where was this?
This was in North Central Ohio.
Okay.
In a really small farm town.
Okay.
Up there. So it was
like Canton ish. Is that?
No. Like near Tiffin.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah. So it was really conservative. Okay. We weren't allowed to listen to secular music. We weren't allowed to listen to music by Black people.
Okay. Great.
I hadn't met a person of color until I was 16, I think.
Oh my God.
And that was because one Black kid that came to our high school when I was 16.
And how did it go? Like with your, with other people, like how did they, you like your family?
That there was a black kid in school?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, he had white parents. He was adopted, so I think that he, like, got a pass.
Okay.
Yeah. Because he was, like, a charity case to them.
Oh, probably. My gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. Was there, how was he treated, generally?
To put this in perspective, I now have a black boyfriend.
Right.
And live in the city.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
How was he treated?
He was treated
pretty okay. Yeah, he was like a band nerd and like into video games and stuff. So he just like hung out with the band kids. Whenever you need to be accepted, you go to band, right?
Right. Yeah. I played the clarinet.
Exactly.
Were you in band?
No, I just hung out with all the band kids.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I was the only kid in the family with no musical ability whatsoever. I'm flat.
Yeah.
I can't carry a tune. Like, yeah. I can dance, but I can't sing. I can't play anything. So, yeah.
Perfect. Okay. So your parents were like, you just use the words that you'd like to describe your parents.
I mean, they were really strict.
Okay.
We were like spoiled.
Yeah.
But still really strict. So we had like a big trampoline, but we also were expected to work 4 hours every day.
To earn the trampoline time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I think that they were of the mindset, like of the traditional mindset that you have kids to support the family, like to continue the work. So
okay. We
like did all the landscaping and cleaned all the house and made the dinners and did all the laundry. And yeah, so it was.
Did you say how many siblings you have?
Nine.
You have nine siblings.
Well, I have eight now. One passed away, but
oh,
yes.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
No.
Wow, that is a lot of siblings, but it's a workforce.
Yeah, it is.
It
is a workforce.
To parents who believe that it is a workforce, it is a workforce.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Five brothers.
Okay.
And it was predominantly the boys that were responsible for everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even though in the Southern Baptist household, the women do most everything. Like, my mother had to do everything else and run everything, but then, like, my stepfather had the final say in all matters.
Yes, of course. So how was your relation between all of your siblings? Like, were you guys close? Were you close in age? Did you like each other?
I think, like, the oldest is 9 years older than me, so
okay.
We weren't too far apart.
Yeah.
And then I was the second youngest, so...
Okay.
We were pretty close. I don't know, mostly roommates.
Yeah.
And then... like two or three were pretty antagonistic toward me, but I think that was just because we lived out in the country and needed something to do. So there was a lot of energy that they had to expel.
Yeah. And why were they antagonistic toward you? Just because,
I mean,
like,
I was
because
different.
Of who you
like,
were?
Yeah. Like they all played sports.
Yeah.
They were all like strapping farm boys.
Yeah.
They didn't have vocabularies.
Yeah.
They didn't read books. Like, they watched Adam Sandler movies.
Right.
So we were pretty different.
You had different interests.
I was like taking pictures and reading books in the corner.
Yeah. And that was something you just drove yourself to do. You were just like naturally drawn to like being like educating yourself and...
Yeah, actually, our family was against education, so it was kind of a political act. Like, we were discouraged from reading. We were told not to go to college. Like, we were expected to basically, like, get factory jobs in our town and, like, stay there for the rest of our lives. So, because we had to help support the church.
Right.
Of which we were a part.
Right.
Yeah.
How did that make you feel?
Yeah, I wasn't rebellious until, like, my early teens.
Okay.
So I was pretty okay.
You
like,
were
I just
okay
did my
it.
Own thing and didn't really... I had no idea or awareness that the world was any different.
Yeah.
Because we were so sheltered.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, I didn't know about inequality. I didn't know about racism.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't learn about things like that in school.
Sure.
And... I just thought that everyone's family was like that.
Yeah. Did you ever feel like held back? Like, do you have early memories of feeling held back by like not being driven to education because it was something that you kind of wanted to do?
I have memories once I got to college.
Yeah.
And feeling really frustrated. One, because I graduated at the top of my class and I felt like I had really accomplished something.
Yeah.
But then realizing how far behind I was because of how terrible our school system was and because of how terrible my family was and how like my development had been really stunted by that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then especially from like a cultural perspective, like I didn't listen to Bob Dylan for the first time until I was 18.
Yeah.
I didn't listen to the Beatles until I was 16. Like
secular.
So I had a lot of catching up to do.
Wow. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. So at 15, I came out.
Yeah.
And I got kicked out. And I lived on my own from there.
In your hometown?
Mm-hmm.
What? Yeah.
So I crashed with, I had been working at Cedar Point.
Yeah.
The gay Mecca.
Yes.
Amusement park.
Yeah.
So I did it because I knew that I would meet gay people. Like
right.
At 14, I had come to terms with my sexuality. And so I was like 14 years old. I'm getting a job at Cedar Point. I'm going to meet people.
Right.
And I did.
You did.
And I got a boyfriend, at 15. And then I was like, cool. I'm telling him like, if I have my parents' support, like I can survive anything.
Yeah.
But I had packed my bags knowing that I wouldn't. And,
right.
It got ugly, but I got out and, yeah, I didn't go back for 3 years.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So where did you stay? Where were you? And how did you succeed academically?
I had a gay mom.
Oh.
Who was only 27, but seemed ancient.
Yeah, then, right. Then.
Who was super, super lascivious. Always like
excellent.
Propositioning me for, like he liked to make plaster molds.
Yeah.
And he really wanted to do a nude mold of me.
Oh, great.
It didn't even occur to me. I was so naive.
Yeah.
But I didn't do the mold.
Yeah.
So I stayed with him for a while.
Yeah.
And then I moved in with a boyfriend.
Yeah.
Unbeknownst to his parents.
Okay. Yeah.
But they were like severe alcoholics and had like mental disorders.
Okay.
So they didn't really notice.
Yeah.
And then when that fell apart.
Yeah.
as
they do.
I stayed with a lot of friends.
Okay.
And not friends in town. So I mostly commuted to and from my small town.
Wow.
I had bought my pickup truck. And when I couldn't find a place, I would just sleep in the pickup truck. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you did succeed academically.
I did. I had two full-time jobs in high school, and I graduated at the top. And I got into an Ivy League school, and I thought as I left, like, fuck you, Ohio. I'm never coming back to you. I'm never talking to these people again.
Yeah, go fuck yourself, Ohio.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I went to the school, and it was, like, my dream school.
Where'd you go to school?
William & Mary.
Okay.
In Virginia.
Yeah.
And I'm a history like fanatic, and so being in a school where Thomas Jefferson went to school, like,
wow,
that was crazy to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then my dad got sick, and he was the only one in my family that I continued to talk to. He was the only one that was like moderately supportive.
Yeah.
And
your stepdad, right?
No, my dad.
Oh,
dad.
Your dad. Dad.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I couldn't live with him because my stepmother is, a lot to handle.
Okay.
But so I came home, mm-hmm. to like be with him because we thought that he was going to die.
Yeah.
And then he didn't die. And then I was pretty pissed because I had left school.
You left school.
And I couldn't go back.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Wow. You couldn't go back to school.
I mean, I think I could have. I defaulted on my student loans in the interim because I didn't know that that was a thing.
Right.
you had to do.
Yeah.
I was 18 and I just was like, 6 months is all you get.
Yeah.
And at that point in time, if you defaulted on your loans, you had to pay them in full before you could go back. This is before they changed the law.
Yeah.
So I moved down to Columbus thinking, well, I'll just work off my loans and then I'll go to OSU.
Yeah. So tell us about when you were a kid and you would like escape down to Columbus.
Sure. I mean, so I was unattended because
I didn't
have a family.
You
anymore.
Had a pickup truck.
Yeah. I had a pickup truck and I had a really awesome group of friends.
Yeah.
There was one gay kid that lived in town.
Yeah.
So I thought that I was the first gay kid to come out.
Okay.
In town, but I wasn't. I was just the first gay kid to come out in school.
Oh,
so
I see.
This fella had mysteriously in his senior year of high school disappeared. And then there were like rumors that he had run off to California.
Oh.
And ooh, 4 years later, yeah, he boarded a Greyhound and came back to our little small town.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But he was just trying to...
Everyone kept telling me I had to meet him. They were like, you'll like him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And he shared the same last name as me, but spelled differently.
Oh.
So okay. we were Kevin and Zach Rowe.
Okay.
And he like became my mentor, and we had a really good group of friends.
Yeah.
And so we would steal off to different cities all the time. I spent most of my time running around Cleveland, but
okay.
I would come to Columbus sometimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. How far was Cleveland from you?
About an hour and 20 minutes.
So did you commute there? You commuted to Sandusky for mm-hmm. work? An hour and a half?
Oh, I didn't live in Cleveland. I lived near Sandusky.
Oh, you lived near Sandusky. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let's be honest. I am like sort of familiar with Cleveland, but mostly the east side. And then like everything else is just like a lake. And I'm like, that's Cleveland, right? And it's all close together, but it's not.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I really love Cleveland.
Yeah. It's a good city.
I can't believe that as a 17-year-old boy, like drinking underage mm-hmm. at the bars and trying to find boys to hook up with in my pickup truck. I survived Cleveland.
Yeah. You did it.
I made it.
You made it. Which did you like more? Which did you prefer?
The hooking up with boys or the underage drinking?
I mean, all of the above. No, Cleveland or Columbus?
Oh, Cleveland, hands down.
Oh, really? Yeah. So why didn't you end up there?
Because Columbus had OSU.
Okay.
No.
All right.
And I'd always been told not to go to college, and then I was told when I finally, you know, decided I was going that I had to go to a public school, that I couldn't yeah. afford a private school.
Right.
I never went through the process of getting emancipated, which I really wish that I had done.
Yeah.
It really like tied my hands with what I could do.
Okay.
So I came down here so I could go to Ohio State.
Okay. Yeah. And that was before you were 18.
All of the runaround was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So what does that involve, though? Like, what held you back because you weren't emancipated from your parents?
So they had to file FAFSAs, basically.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Financially, of course. Of course it was fucking financially.
Yeah. So if I had been emancipated when I was a teenager, I could claim that I was completely independent.
Right.
And then I would qualify for all sorts of aid because
yeah.
I would have been an at-risk youth.
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly.
But I didn't know about those things.
Jesus. Okay. All right. So do you have contact with your family now?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And have you like healed a lot? Like how's the relationship gone over time?
It's pretty distant.
Okay.
And pretty cold.
Yeah.
I just opened up to my sisters who I really like, and those are my stepfather's daughters.
Yeah.
But I opened up to them recently about like what I went through in high school. I think that they were older and didn't realize they had gone off to college.
Yeah.
And they knew that it was like rough for me, but they didn't know how rough.
Yeah.
And that was really healing.
Yeah.
But my mother and I have still not talked about it.
Really?
We do talk now, mm-hmm. but my stepfather passed away, which enabled us to start talking about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
She reached out. But yeah, we pretend like nothing's happened. We talk maybe like two or three times a year.
Wow. Mm. And what about your other siblings? Do they still live there, or are any of them down here? Or
no, most of them live there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your brothers you don't talk to, really?
Nope.
Ugh. Well, I mean, you know, when your brothers like bully you all throughout your childhood, imagine that would be hard.
I was just having a conversation with my best friend before I came in about, my younger brother is now a teen dad.
Oh, no way.
He sent me an invitation to his kid's first birthday party,
mm-hmm.
which all of my family sends me invitations to things because it's the polite Midwestern thing to do.
Right.
But, like, they know and I know.
It's like subtext.
That I'm not going to be there.
Right.
And I think the understanding is that they don't want me there.
Yeah.
Because it's too complicated to explain to their friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he called. He called and asked why I hadn't RSVP'd. And I was like, do you not understand what
this is unwritten,
how these
dude.
Family dynamics go? Yeah, like, right. I can't explain this to you. Yeah. This is...
If you don't know, I'm not going to tell
you. We are waspy.
Yeah. Like, right.
I can't just... Yeah.
Yeah.
So So I didn't tell him. I just said, oh, yeah, I'll think about it.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Because, I don't know, you can't take the wasp out of the boy.
That's right. Yeah. Do you ever feel like you're missing something, or do you just feel like that was, it's such a relief to be like not tied down?
I think, you know, I've had so many like surrogate parents, that I don't feel like I'm missing much anymore.
Yeah.
I still have folks that I can go to and like ask the same questions that most people would ask their parents.
Yeah.
But not having like a teenage year, teenage years, that was really affecting. And, I think that I'm still like paying the price for that. You know, I was in survival mode for 5 years, and I never learned all of the like really important lessons that you learn when you're a teenager.
Right.
Like, because you have a safe and supportive environment to make mistakes and be supported. And, so I think at around 21, I realized that I didn't have emotions.
Yeah.
I just had like anger or happy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I like had to relearn or figure out what emotions were and all of those things.
Wow. Tell me about your gay family. I assume that you have some sort of family structure in the queer community. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, Columbus is hard, right? Like, because leave so often.
Right.
I feel like I'm on my fourth or fifth family.
Yeah.
At this point, just keep rebuilding.
Yeah.
But I'm getting older now, so it's easier because the older ones don't leave as often.
Yeah. Right.
And it's also, it's exciting getting older because I can look at things from look at 20-year-olds and like know what I was feeling when a 30-year-old talked to me, which is that they want to sleep with me.
Mm-hmm.
And like laugh at myself because some of them really just think that I'm interesting or like brilliant or are going to like shine forever. And those are the 20-year-olds that I want to talk to and support and like help them become whatever they want to be. So, I think that's been really cool.
Yeah. Do you feel like you have like a paternal instinct with those kinds of people?
Yeah, I think so. I try not to be paternalistic.
Yeah.
I think that it leads to a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
But I do. I get really protective.
Do you feel that way because it's why? Because it's political or because it's harmful to their development or what is that?
I think more political.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the last thing that I wanted when I was a young person was someone making decisions for me.
Yeah.
Or telling me how it was going to be different in 10 years.
Yeah.
No, I think I just wanted someone to like one, see me.
Yeah.
And, two, like feel supported.
Right.
And I think I wanted to be able to like bounce my ideas off of someone without experiencing judgment. So
yeah.
That's what I try to be.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. I'm trying to think of other things that I want to talk to you about. What else do you want to talk about?
So I don't think I've talked to anyone about this, in a recorded format before, or an official capacity.
Okay.
But, so I moved down to Columbus and, somehow, and this is a total side story, but somehow I ended up living with four drag queens.
Oh.
Which was interesting.
Was that your first gay family?
No. I mean, I feel like my first gay family was when I was in high school. And Kevin Rowe and those people that supported me.
Okay.
But then I came down here and this was like the new gay family. For
yeah,
sure.
Right.
So I became what I would call a drag fag.
Yeah.
Like going to the drag shows and like carrying all of their wigs and helping them like get dressed and I don't know, learning a bunch of slang that I didn't know before.
Yeah.
Which is really, I guess, fun. It was cool. I don't know. Everyone was so ridiculous and over the top that you really got to like play with who you were too.
Yeah.
As long as you didn't overshadow them.
Yeah.
But it was also, they were rough. Like it was tough living. And, I took this job, which was supposed to be entry level management. And I was really excited that I didn't have a college degree, but that these people like recognized that I was smart and I could be a manager.
Yeah.
And it was in sales that I was always really good at, like, talking to people. And
yeah.
I, like, sell shit to people at Lowe's all the time, even though I don't work there. I'm just like, you should go with this tool.
You need,
like,
to get
it's a really good one.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how I ended up selling knockoff perfume and cologne
okay.
on the streets in major cities up and down the East Coast.
Is this a real story?
Yeah. Yeah. It was like a total pyramid scheme, but I didn't
what?
Know what a pyramid scheme was because again,
this is through the drag queens.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Okay.
So yeah, it was really interesting.
How did that happen? Like, who brought you into that?
So they didn't bring me into it. They just really encouraged me.
For their own benefit.
I was looking for a job. Right? Maybe. I mean, they definitely got
Were they at the top of the pyramid?
Some good, cheap perfume out of it. No, they weren't.
Oh, okay. Well, at least that's something.
They weren't. But they, I mean, they definitely, like, we got a lot of drugs out of it for sure.
Oh, perfect.
I don't know. It was really weird. I was struggling to find work, and someone handed me an ad, and I went in, and I got the job. Except that, of course, everyone got the job because
right.
it was a pyramid scheme.
Right. Yeah.
So for like a year, I did this, and I didn't really make any money.
Yeah.
At all. Like, I made
Someone
enough money
did.
To eat food.
Right.
But just the food that day.
Right.
So I was surviving off of, like, double cheeseburgers.
Mm-hmm.
And then charging everything else.
Mm.
Thinking, like, I'm going to get my own office soon, though. Like, they keep telling me I'm
right.
the top salesperson.
Right.
And, yeah. So that's how I racked up $10,000.
Oh, my god!
In
gosh.
Credit card debt.
Jeez, oh man.
And became homeless again.
No. Holy shit.
Yeah, I had guns pulled on me. I had knives pulled on me. I was the top salesperson in Ohio, though. I do want to say
you
that.
You were? Mm-hmm. Or like someone
oh, yeah.
just told you that?
No,
yeah,
I was.
I mean, that's...
Yeah. I went to New Jersey and got an award for it.
No
from,
kidding.
From like the pyramid over the Ohio pyramid. Like, there were layers.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. A trip that I charged, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yes. You traveled the East Coast doing this?
Oh, yeah. It was in all the, like, really hard hit cities. So I was in Newark, New Jersey a lot, and Charlotte, West Virginia a lot. Mm-hmm.
And you were selling on the street?
New York. Yep. Oh, yeah.
Just
out
of
a bag.
Cart?
Out of a bag.
A bag?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't even have a cart.
Just approach people. Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
And all of the, like, the boxes were just different colors.
Was
so
that legal?
Oh, God, no.
Okay, yeah.
All the boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, yeah. So the pitch was that it was like a CVS brand, right? Like, we
mm-hmm,
save
mm-hmm.
money
right.
by not advertising. That's why you
right.
don't see anything on the box. But we knew that, like, purple meant Dolce & Gabbana.
Right.
And the light blue box was Dolce & Gabbana light blue. And
right.
the dark blue was, oh, I can't remember. Oh, Burberry.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we had
still
all sorts
got it.
Of, yeah.
You still got
mm-hmm.
it.
And, you know, you put a little spray on someone's wrist and start talking to them. And it was a hustle. It was, like, 100% a hustle.
Oh,
I was
yeah.
the only white dude, and I learned, like, how to be a hustler.
Wow.
Yeah.
You could probably translate those skills to, a say, a Bath & Body Works.
I could.
You
yeah, I could be selling
could.
Shampoo.
Yeah.
Why am I preventing HIV?
Yeah. What are you doing, Zach? Jeez. Wasting your time and skills, clearly.
Good to know I have something to fall back on.
Yes. The reason I say that is because I did work at Bath & Body Works for a minute.
Did you get a headache every day?
It was the worst. It was the worst. I was so bad at it. They hated me. They always put me in the back. They'd be like, there's some restocking to do, Christine.
I feel like I would just be using the salt scrub all the time until I
yeah.
was just a skeleton.
You just didn't have skin.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, oh my God. I can't believe that's real. At one point I was like, he's making this up, like, as he goes.
So then I was homeless again.
Yeah.
And I was $10,000 in debt. And so I started living.
When was this?
Out of
How
my
old
car.
Were you?
I was, 19 or 20.
Okay. Yeah. So this was like in between William & Mary and OSU. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I didn't get back and finish OSU until
I had no idea you weren't done telling the story. I was like, oh, well, I guess we're up to the present now. No, we're not. All right, let's go.
So then I got a bunch of jobs because I was like, fuck, I've really messed up my life. Like, I need to get my shit together. So I started... I was doing this thing where I worked like three jobs in a row and just like slept like an hour in between each and then would sleep like 4 or 5 hours at the end of that and then started all over again.
Oh my gosh.
And one of those was third shift at Steak and Shake, which I have so many stories about because it was the one on campus.
Gosh.
It was amazing. Fights every single night, but mostly fights between the servers. So like the servers would beat each other up.
What?
Yeah. It was amazing. It was really
amazing.
Were
they soccer hooligans? What were they doing?
It was just so high stress that people would break. And you would just like watch people break.
Did you ever get into a fight?
No. I did hand someone a tray though in the middle of a fight so that they could hit someone else with it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You were an accomplice, Zach. Yeah.
I definitely enabled them. This was before smartphones were a thing, but right. I would have been selling this on YouTube.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it was really good.
I would have encouraged that.
So
for sure.
That was the worst.
Did anyone ever pee in the restaurant?
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was only there for, I did it about a month.
Okay.
On my last night.
You experienced a lot in 30 days.
Yeah, I did. There were like 6 or 7 fights. I watched someone throw a milkshake at another server, but it was like in one of the glass like those heavy glass things. That was the day that I was like, cool, I'm done.
Gotta go.
Yeah. And I walked out with all my bank and was like, bye. I'm just gonna take this $300 of your money.
Yeah.
Sorry Steak and Shake if you're listening. But I became a houseboy because that's how you
a what?
That's what happens when you overwork yourself and you're a cute 19-year-old and desperate for money.
Oh, like a club. Like a club? Like a house club?
No.
What is it? Like, tell me. I don't know what that is. I'm so...
I cleaned a home.
Oh.
And performed other duties.
Okay.
For a nice gentleman couple.
Okay.
In their 50s who owned a fabulous home in Key West.
Okay.
Yeah.
This was in Key West or in Columbus?
No, I was flown to Key West.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Was this like, when was it?
This was through one of the drag queens.
Through the drag queens?
Mm-hmm.
Did they care for you?
Exactly.
What was that?
What was happening?
Yeah.
So.
They kind of took care of you, but
they kept giving me opportunities, but they were all opportunities that led to disaster.
Terrible opportunities.
I mean, they were terrible drag
queens. Did they know? Are they still around?
One of them is a Facebook friend, so I'll definitely have to block them whenever I share this podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know about the others.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, they weren't having your best interest in mind. Or did they think they were?
I think that they were like, this is a way for you to get back on your feet.
Oh, God. Okay. Right?
Like, sex work. No
they
big deal.
They knew what was going on, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they didn't think of it as a problem? Maybe they assumed that I knew what was going on as well. But again, like, really naive, small-town farm boy.
See?
So.
That's the thing. I feel like a lot of older people, not older, but like, I don't know. They don't think about what they thought when they were that age. They think about it from their world view at that time.
Totally.
And they're not like, oh, like this young person, I'm like ruining their life. You know, like
he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, no, like he knows what he's getting into. We all know. We're all on a level here.
Mm, yeah.
It's like that family dynamic thing, you know? Why? If you need me to explain this to you. Oh my God. Okay. So tell us more about that. Tell me everything that you want to tell me about that experience in Key West.
I mean, it was weird because I, for the first time, had like a lot of resources.
Yeah.
Right? Like we went to dinner.
And it was
like
probably fancy as hell too.
It was pretty fancy.
Yeah.
It was, I was trying to like be smart about it.
Yeah.
So I didn't bring any clothes with me to say like, I need clothes.
Oh, good for you. No, I didn't pack anything.
Good like, for I you. Have two shirts. So I was like trying to get a wardrobe out of it.
Yeah.
And the agreement was that they would pay like in installments parts of my credit card. Like that was the like big win, right? Like okay. I said, I have this credit card and like they're coming after me and yeah. I don't know what to do.
And you had a place to stay and you had like meals. Is that
exactly.
right?
Exactly. Oh yeah.
Okay. All right.
And a drawer full of joints that their that their housekeeper, which I'm like, if you
okay.
have right. Right. So that all sounds great. And it was pretty cool.
Especially, for like a minute, though.
We lived like 3 blocks from Hemingway's house.
Okay.
And I was like a book nerd. So
yeah,
that was really cool.
That was cool.
I did lots of reading.
Yeah.
But also it I had like zero autonomy.
Right. It was not cool.
It wasn't
It was not cool.
I couldn't talk to anyone yes. my age. Like I was forbidden. No. Yeah. I couldn't go out of the house by myself.
Oh my God.
Unless it was like to get groceries, but I had to come right back and... It was a lot of them like taking me to bars and showing me off and being like, this is Zach. Like, this is our new boy.
Ew.
Yeah, it was really, really disgusting.
Ew.
Yeah. But then I got sent home because I was quote unquote ungrateful.
Oh, good for you. Yeah, you were ungrateful.
I was really ungrateful.
Oh my.
But
God.
I got my credit card paid
yeah,
off.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. I mean... That could not have been an easy process, though. I mean, I feel like you do you feel like you would have rather just paid it off yourself? Like,
I don't know that I could have. I mean,
okay.
I think if I continued to work the 3 jobs, but I think that I would have
that
given
was
myself
not
insane.
Sustainable. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. It probably would have been a lot more terrible decisions.
Yeah.
And me just like digging myself deeper.
Right.
And being super depressed.
Okay.
So I totally took a shortcut.
Yeah.
Paid
that's
heavily,
okay.
Yeah.
No one's, we're here for you. We're supporting you.
I got that credit card paid.
I'm here for you. Yeah.
Came back to Ohio.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So did you feel it? Like, did it feel like you were going back? Because I've been in an abusive relationship. Let's talk about it. Did you feel like you were going back to a house that was like, I know that feeling of dread. Like, I know what I'm getting into when I walk back into that door and it is not good for me. Did you feel that? Like what?
Yeah. How? And you feel like you have to like put a mask on.
Yeah. Like
right.
Yeah. Right.
You
exactly.
You walk in and
yeah, the
smile
look.
At them.
Yeah.
And
the doe eyed look.
I'm so happy to be here.
I can't wait to just bow to your every need, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. No, I totally understand that. So, and then like, as things were happening to you there, like, did you, because you didn't have, you said that you didn't really have like a solid, like emotional foundation, like as things were happening to you there, were you like, dealing or was it just sort of building up? Like, tell me about the emotional side of it.
I mean, I think I retreated into books. I think
okay.
that was my reaction, mm-hmm. that I couldn't deal with it. I toyed with the idea of writing things down, and I started to write some things down in a journal, and then the journal mysteriously disappeared.
Oh, no.
So I didn't do that anymore.
Right. Yeah.
And I read, and I read so often and so graciously
mm-hmm.
that I think that's part of the reason why I got sent home.
Yeah.
That I wasn't like doing anything and I wasn't fun.
Right.
That I wasn't like, I should be laying by the pool more often.
Yeah.
And I should be cleaning their car.
But if you were laying by the pool and reading,
I
would
that
have
been
okay? Okay.
But like, I didn't want to show them my body.
Right.
You know,
no,
like,
that would have been horrible. Yes.
And so,
yeah.
Yeah, it was a whole thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you were ungrateful.
I was ungrateful.
And
and I was so ungrateful, of course, because I'm really not great with authority.
Yeah.
For so many reasons.
Well, yeah, clearly. My God.
Yeah. So they told me I was ungrateful. And rather than say, please, like, pay for my ticket home, I said,
yeah.
fuck you, and walked out.
Right.
Leaving behind all of my things and also... not having a way to get home.
Yeah.
Being in Key West.
Right.
So then I just kind of like bummed around Key West for a while until I got up enough money.
Did you know anyone?
There was one bartender that was kind of my age that was a hippie that lived on the beach.
Yeah.
And so that was who I went to.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you stay with said hippie?
Mm-hmm. I mean, stay is a loose term. He didn't really have a place.
Yeah. Was there like a shelter? Situation?
It was mostly blankets.
Okay.
Yeah, that were like strung. And then if the weather wasn't good, we went to, there was a Russian couple.
Yeah.
That didn't really speak much English, but they were there like doing like bar backing at
yeah.
one of the bars. And so we would sleep on their floor sometimes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So then did you have a job during that time? Like, how did you...
No, I was underage, and everything in Key West is a bar. So I had been, like, granted access because these guys were rich and powerful, and, like, no one ever carded me. But I was only 20, so I couldn't get a job doing anything.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I eventually got friends from Columbus and some people in Key West to, like, pitch in.
Okay. Yeah.
I had also been trying to pull a scam, which was that, like, I had an apartment in Columbus that I needed them to continue paying rent for.
Yeah.
So they had sent, like, a couple $100 back every month. So I had, like, $600 or something.
Oh,
which
yeah.
then I spent to get home.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what about the healing after that?
I think that I found healing after that in, like, finally taking control of my life.
Yeah.
So I came back and got a job doing petitioning, canvassing. I was like, well, I've been out on the streets talking to strangers before.
Yeah. Like, this is a comfort zone for me.
This is a skill set
me.
I have, yeah. as we've talked about.
Right, right.
And I was really good at it.
Yeah.
Just like being the top salesperson for knockoff perfume and cologne.
That's right.
I was really good at getting signatures.
Yep. You were hustling, but for a good cause.
Yeah, for a good cause.
Do you remember what cause?
It was the minimum wage amendment.
Oh, awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so cool. It was good. And then it was a few other things as well because I kept doing it.
Yeah.
But I kept getting promoted and, like, I was really, like, getting responsibility and, like, I felt like I was succeeding and I was making good money, which was enabling me to pay off my student loans.
Yeah.
And so then I ran campaigns. Like, I was made a director of the, Central Ohio field office. And then I was, like, strategy and I was doing all sorts of stuff. So for, like, 3 years, I just ran campaigns and I paid off all of my student debt and then I went back to school. And then as soon as I got back to school, I went to therapy.
Yeah. Amen.
It was like, good, I have access to resources.
Oh my God. That changes everything.
It did.
I mean, I went through like a hot minute where I didn't have insurance and it like rocked me, but like you didn't have insurance your entire life.
From 15 to 24.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Zach, I'm so happy you're here right now. I'm just happy that I know you.
I made it.
You did. You did make it.
I did, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Now I'm, like, program manager at this, like, awesome organization.
Amazing,
and,
yeah.
I get to do great work, and I own a house. And
you do.
It's, like, crazy to me.
A really fucking nice house, Zach.
Thanks.
It
Thanks.
Is. I'm just going to speak directly to the listeners right now. I went to Zach's house this weekend.
Yeah.
It is a fucking museum. It's like a work of art. Like, if you want free beauty in the world,
yeah.
Just first of all, know Zach or Brian, who is great also. but then also, like, invite yourself to Zach's house.
Okay.
The colors, the color scheme in itself.
Thanks.
I mean, I, whatever.
So the thing about living on your own is that you just amass a bunch of shit and you like do that over a long period of time and then you get really awesome stuff.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, you do. Yeah. You have nice stuff and it's arranged nicely.
Thanks.
I mean, I could never arrange things like
Well,
nicely.
I dated a Virgo for 4 years and I learned a lot from him.
Okay. Like a feng shui type situation.
Yeah. All Virgos are very... They're like super into alignment.
Everything that you see in this house is done by my wife, who is a Virgo. And it's like the little touches, you know,
mm-hmm.
like a diffuser here, a flower here.
There's
it's like a whole thing.
Attention to detail.
Yeah. No, I'm a Cancer and I'm just like, big picture. Woo! Like we have a home over our heads and everything else doesn't matter. I can feel all my feelings under a roof. That's great. I do want to hear a little bit about your work ethic because you clearly have just like this natural drive to like succeed and like work fucking hard and be the best. And I see it, you know, in your work definitely with queer behavior. And I don't know a lot about your work with Equitas, but I imagine that it's there too. So I don't know, just describe to me like where, you know, where it comes from and like what drives you.
I think it It probably comes from anxiety.
I identify.
Yeah. And also like I've always been providing for myself mm-hmm. since I've had to. And yeah. In order to do that, I've had to work double or triple time.
Right.
And so really until last year was the first year of my life that I had only one job.
Yeah.
Which really, really blew me away. And it made wow. me feel really uncomfortable
yeah.
because I had like time
right.
that I had never had before.
Yeah.
And I think that I don't know what to do with time.
I was just going to ask you, what do you do with it?
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess I work more is what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I either like spend hours painting my house to make it super beautiful.
It is so beautiful. Yeah.
Or I plan more queer behavior events.
Yeah.
Or I pour myself into the work that I do with Equitas, which really, I mean, takes up a lot of time and energy.
Yeah.
But I absolutely love doing it. So
do you want to talk about that?
So I oversee PrEP and PEP.
Yeah.
PrEP is the pill to prevent HIV.
Okay.
You take a once daily pill, mm-hmm. can't get HIV. It's
right.
like guaranteed, basically. All you got to do is take this pill.
Yeah.
Which is incredible. PEP is the morning after pill for HIV. So if you like, come into contact or if you think you might have, like
yeah.
you can take a round. It's not just one pill. But
yeah.
and it can prevent HIV infection. So I started at what was formerly known as AIDS Resource Center
yeah.
About 4 years ago doing advocacy for people living with HIV.
Yeah.
And because I'm loud and not afraid to like ask questions or be independent,
right.
that was really a great job for me.
Yeah.
Again, the street skills came in handy.
Yeah.
the really uncomfortable thing about that experience, though, is that after I started, 12 close friends disclosed their status to me
oh,
that
wow.
I had known for some time.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that they were HIV positive.
Right.
And HIV had always felt like an inevitability
mm-hmm.
just because it does, I think, for every gay man.
Yeah.
Like I remember my father telling me that I had to watch Philadelphia
yeah.
like within seconds after I had come out to him.
Oh gosh.
And then I did, and it was like, this is what your future is going to be, right?
Right,
like, you're
exactly.
gonna waste away
yeah.
and become a skeleton.
Yeah. Do you think that was a scare tactic, or do you think he just cared about you? And
I think
it was
he really just cared, and he was
yeah.
terrified that that was what was gonna happen.
Okay.
But yeah, so it felt like an inevitability, and then it really like hit home that it was an inevitability. And then this new pill came out in 2012. It was approved, and no one was talking about it, but like it was the first opportunity that people like really had to like take complete control.
Yeah.
Right. Cause no one uses condoms every single time.
Yeah.
That's just not
right.
our reality. We
yeah.
have 50,000 new HIV infections every single year. We have for 15 years. Like, it's not going anywhere.
Exactly.
Obviously, the condom message isn't working for
yeah.
everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, the idea that HIV could no longer be a concern for people
uh-huh.
Really blew me away. And so I fought really hard internally in the organization to start offering it through our medical centers. And we were only funded to do services for people with HIV, so it would have been us like operating at a loss.
Mm-hmm.
And I won. So
yeah.
I got the CEO on board
yeah.
and he got the medical centers on board, and we started offering it, and it exploded. Like, it became a primary leg of the organization.
Yeah.
So now it is one of our three main talking points.
Right.
And they needed someone to run it.
Yeah.
So they brought me over, and now I just get to go talk about like how important and awesome it is.
Yeah.
But also like because of my experience working with people with HIV
mm-hmm.
And hearing their stories, I get to incorporate that. And I don't think people often get the opportunity to have both sides of that experience.
Right.
And so that's been really great, because I get to talk like also when people are HIV and undetectable, HIV positive and undetectable, they're not transmissible. Like, they can't transmit the virus.
Right.
And I don't think people know that either. So
yeah.
I get to talk about those things like hand in hand, which
yeah.
is really cool.
Yeah.
And I get to talk about sex, and I get to talk about butt sex and like why pleasure is important
yeah.
and why we don't use condoms all the time
yeah.
and why that's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
which is super cool.
That is great. So do you consider yourself a community educator or a sex educator or all of the above?
Oh, I don't consider myself any of those things.
Really?
I mean, I definitely do all of those things.
Yeah.
But like my sex education was in fifth grade. My gym teacher told our class that an orgasm is when you pee semen.
Shut up.
And so I spent the next however until I had sex with someone, because when I was masturbating, I didn't know that that was an orgasm. I had to wait until someone else was in the room to tell me what an orgasm was.
Oh my gosh.
Again, really naive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not your fault.
Yeah. So I don't feel like an expert at all. Yeah. But I try to talk from my own personal experience,
right,
which is, as you know, quite deep.
Yes. Quite varied.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think, I say all the time that like, the only reason why I don't have HIV is just pure luck.
Yeah.
Like there's no rhyme or reason to it. You know,
yeah.
I know so many, I hate talking about blame even, but I know so many people that were in like seemingly monogamous relationships, mm-hmm, then that were then, you know, tested positive for HIV because they found out that they weren't in monogamous relationships.
Right.
And it's, I don't know. We all do stupid shit, and
yeah,
we all do things because they feel good,
mm-hmm,
and that's not stupid, and
right,
no one should be punished or ostracized for that and
right,
judged for the rest of their lives.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
And I feel comfortable saying those things, so
sure.
I don't know. I like to talk,
you're just
about
a maverick. That's what you are. You're just a maverick. You
I
just go for it.
They keep putting me in positions where it's just like, we need someone loud who like who will just do whatever they want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, cool.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah.
But Equitas is like a social enterprise, right? So your pharmacy,
mm-hmm,
has a social enterprise element.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
Please go fill your prescriptions at the Equitas Health Pharmacy,
yes,
in the Short North at 1033 North High Street.
Yeah, tell us why.
Because all of the proceeds from the pharmacy, so it's a for-profit pharmacy,
yeah,
all of anything that anyone fills, that money goes right back into the nonprofit arm of our work.
Right.
And I am actually completely unfunded. So
wow,
all of the work that I do is funded purely from pharmacy profits.
Wow.
Which is super, super important to
yeah,
me. So especially if you have expensive medications, get them filled at our pharmacy so that I can keep doing my work.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah.
Zach, you have lived such a life. Now, before we end this, because you know, I don't want to, like I said,
if
you're a busy
must
man. Before we end, I want you to talk a little bit about queer behavior and how you see the future of queer behavior.
People ask this all the time. And
yeah,
I think,
It seems like it's been hard to predict so far.
It is. I mean, it's gone through a lot of lives.
Yeah.
Just like gay families do. And that's really what queer behavior is. I mean, the people
yeah
that are involved in it are like a gay family, a queer
mm-hmm
family.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. I mean, what I would really love to see happen
mm-hmm
is for there to be a space that is not gay, but queer,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
that is available during the day, that feels comfortable,
mm-hmm,
for people to be in.
Yeah.
Whether that is like a mixed use space or a coffee shop or a bookstore or whatever,
yeah,
but something. I don't see that anymore.
Right.
And I think that that's possible.
Yeah.
I think that it's especially possible if you follow something like a social enterprise model.
Right.
Absolutely. But that requires a lot of work. So we'll see.
And people to stay.
And people to stay.
Yeah.
And me to not work.
Yeah.
60 or 70 hours a week.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you're staying, right? You'll be here?
I'm staying.
You're in Columbus for life?
I don't know about that.
Not
but I'm
life?
Staying for now.
For now?
Yeah.
Okay. You have plans?
No plans.
Thoughts?
I have a lot of allergies, and this is not a great climate for me
okay
to be optimally happy.
Yeah.
And I would love to reach the top of Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Right.
And
yeah,
I can't do that when I'm taking Claritin D every day.
Oh,
I just don't feel it.
No.
So I think eventually Maybe. I flirt with leaving all the time.
Right. Don't we all?
I.
But then, like, Columbus is so nice. It's such a good city.
It is. I, you know, I look at Columbus and all I see are the problems. And not in, like, a bad way, but in, like, a... Like, I think it's the most economically segregated city. Yeah. I think it's the most racially segregated city. Yeah. And, like, all of the reasons why we started queer behavior, like, all of those reasons are still there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's really frustrating.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad that we've built a community in queer behavior mm-hmm. that succeeds. And it's really, like, it is building connections and building bridges.
Yeah.
But it's not solving any problems. Right. And I'm a problem solver.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I guess.
So do you feel like you look at it as like, you know, something that, do you feel like it's something that's attainable for you, for the city?
Do I, what's attainable?
I guess helping like all the communities to come together and sort of solving those problems that we do have here.
Maybe in my spare time, I've been known to, I won't say like really get involved, but I've been known to consult. As maybe people see me as a queer community leader.
Yeah.
I think straight people especially.
Yeah.
Because I'm accessible because I'm a cis white dude.
Right, right, right.
But I get brought in on like political discussions a lot, in like secret rooms, right? And so I think like the ward, the precinct like campaign.
Yeah.
A lot of that was my language that I wrote for them.
Wow.
And I thought that was a potential solution, you know, that if we give neighborhoods a voice, that's really powerful. That you, if you know that the person representing you mm-hmm. lives in your neighborhood and is just down the street, then I think that they have more accountability.
Absolutely.
And that's really important.
Yeah.
I also think that our city will never change if it's just completely controlled by one party, even though it's the party that I typically vote for.
Right.
So I think that we have, I think that there are solutions, that could make a difference over time. But clearly Columbus isn't ready because none of those things have been well received.
Mm-mm. No. Seems like a bummer note to end on. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what is in your Netflix queue.
Actually, could you ask him his book list?
Book list. What's yeah. Brian would like to know what your book list is.
Oh man.
That like helps you get through all that shit.
So
yeah, that's a really great question, Brian.
It is a really great question. Yeah. What's my book list that helps me get through everything? My book list is usually super depressing.
Okay. I was like, we'll talk about smiling. Breaking Bad and it'll be fun and we'll bring it. Not that that's fun.
So I majored in sociology when I eventually went back to school. And I am a sociology nerd. So I'm constantly reading about race and racial justice and racial injustice, class and gender and all of these social problems.
Right.
I recently, though, because I was no longer working more than one job, decided that I had to reincorporate fiction into my life. So I'm right in the middle of this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful book that is also heart-wrenching, but it's incredible. And it's called A Little Life. And it was called, like, the queer book of 2015, I think, written by a cis white woman who's straight.
Interesting choice.
Oh, you know what? Well, I'm already quoted on that, but she might not be white. She might be a woman of color, but she's definitely straight.
Yeah.
But it is great. It is the like the queer book of the 21st century so far.
Yeah.
Ouch. that sucks. But it's really incredible. And I've been finding a lot of catharsis in that. So the one of the protagonists has this like incredible capacity to be this like amazing person. They're brilliant. They're an attorney. Like they care about social justice. But they've also had like these extreme tragedies in their childhood that haunt them for the rest of their life and really impact the way they relate to the world and the way that they relate to their friends and the people that love them. And this person spends a lot of their time kind of questioning why people would like them or why people would love them. And so maybe I'm finding something to relate to there. But it's also really cathartic to be to like read that experience and
yeah,
and I don't know, to process it. It's helping me process a lot of different things. So that's been really cool.
Do you feel like you're still processing? Like you're still in the midst of healing?
Anytime I hear the word mother, it's like process central.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, ugh, it just makes me want to shudder.
Yeah.
But
you feel like you're getting there.
Getting there.
Yeah.
I'm just finishing up Luke Cage.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
Which has been really good.
Yeah.
I still think I like Jessica Jones better.
Really?
I think that Luke Cage is like better produced. I think that the like director is really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The whole style of it, everything.
Yeah.
I think some of the, and I think it's on purpose though. So maybe it's just like a personal preference, but I think some of the, like choices in the like language and stuff seem a little too comic booky to me.
Yeah.
Like there's like a, in like Luke a, Cage. Like a Reading Rainbow lesson in every episode.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, it feels like Saturday morning cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
But I also kind of like that too. So I don't know. I'm torn. We'll see how it ends. And yeah. Then I'll know.
I saw one clip of it. The actor, what's his name? In Luke Cage.
Oh, I don't remember.
Okay. Well, he was on the Chelsea Handler show.
Matt something.
Yeah. He was on Chelsea Handler show. And she like played a clip of it. And it looked like very produced in a way that I'm not used to seeing TV.
Because it's produced entirely by people of color.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is in itself amazing.
Yeah. It was amazing. I was like.
His name is Mike Coulter.
Mike Coulter.
Damn it.
Yeah, yeah, Matt. Yeah. Okay.
That was close.
Yeah, it was.
He's adorable.
He is really adorable.
The show uses live music too, which is really cool.
They use live music.
Well, yeah, I mean the performers like in the
oh,
club.
Oh, right,
yeah.
Right. When they have these amazing like legendary performers.
Yeah.
Like, in the first episode, Rafael Sadiq performs.
Yeah.
And the fucking Delphonics perform in one of the episodes. These are like all heroes of mine, you know, after I finally got to listen to music.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been really cool.
Yeah.
So that's been really great.
Okay, I'm going to watch that. And I'm going to watch Jessica Jones. I've heard a lot about it. I've also heard that it can be like a little bit like triggering.
Yeah, it can definitely be triggering. I also think it can be cathartic though.
Yeah, I've heard that too. But I've been a little bit afraid of it. So I'm, you know, but now that they're both out, I feel like it's a good opportunity to mm-hmm. get
so
into
I think
both.
In they're both satisfying because they both are... people who are typically disempowered, who are largely invincible, and who like kick ass and are completely unapologetic about having that power.
Yeah. That is a great way to end, Zach, because I mean, I feel like you're making moves too, man. You're making moves. I feel like this, you know, I mean, I'm appreciative of you and your work and I like getting to know you and I'm happy that we're able to sit down together.
Likewise, this has been awesome.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it. Thanks, guys. Thanks, babes. The Babylonians out there.
Thanks, babes.
All the babes out in Babeland.
Yeah.
If you're watching this at night, sleep tight. If you're watching this on your way to work, then have a great day.
Do you watch podcasts?
Watch the little...
We're going to edit that out. I'm suddenly uncomfortable in my chair. No one, I mean, hopefully somebody got to the end of it anyway. So. All right, I'm going to go slink away in shame.